This series is sponsored by Black ProGen Live, Genealogy with Seasoning, an innovative web series hosted by Nika Smith and True Lewis featuring the most diverse voices in the genealogy and family history space. With more than 80 episodes and counting, don't miss out on the laughs and learning from your favorite genealogy crew. Visit whoisnikasmith.com to subscribe and more. May 10, 1839, was Eliza Lawrence Trask's wedding day in New York City. Her father, Israel Elliott Trask, was not there to walk her down the aisle or to celebrate, dying 4 years earlier in their native Springfield, Massachusetts. A range of thoughts and emotions likely crossed her mind. Moving across the threshold meant more than just participating in a holy sacrament of Christianity or a name change. It also meant that her legacy and that of her soon-to-be husband, John Gallison Tappan, were forever tied to a level of duality and contradictions that Americans experience to this day. Just as the honeymoon vibes had settled in, on July 2, 1839, members of the Mende tribe of Sierra Leone refused captivity and actively rebelled against enslavement aboard the Amistad.
Give us free. Give us free.
Your Honor, please instruct the defendant that he cannot disrupt these proceedings with such a...
Give us free!
Their legal defense was organized in part by Eliza's new uncle-in-law, Louis Tappan. 6 years prior, the same Uncle Louis, his brother Arthur Tappan, and Theodore Dwight Weld formed the American Anti-Slavery Society, whose sole goal was the entire abolition of slavery in the United States. Eliza's new Tappan family were on the front lines of abolitionism, even harboring fugitive slaves like Anna Maria Weems, whose descendants, along with the grandson of Louis Tappan, were featured in the recent Ancestry and Sundance TV film, Railroad Ties. But there was a certain type of life Eliza knew. Her childhood was spent straddling two distinct existences, one in a bastion of liberalism, abolitionism, free people of color, and active stops on the Underground Railroad in Western Massachusetts, the other displaying the spoils of wealth and opulence funded by the legal but morally oxymoronic toil of enslaved people in Wilkinson County, Mississippi. Like an ardent supporter of President Trump's Mexican border wall who actively buys produce from businesses that employ undocumented immigrants, or an opponent of mass incarceration whose 401k is skyrocketing thanks to investments in for-profit prisons, Eliza's world was really a living example of the contradiction that is the foundation of the country she lived in, the United States.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
The nuptials joining the Tappans and the Trasks was like taking a sledgehammer to each family's cornerstone principles encased in glass, fortified by anti-slavery on one side and support and active participation in the institution on the other. 4 months before her marriage to John Gallison Tappan, Eliza, while living in the North in New York City, lent today's equivalent of $400,000 to her Uncle James. James Lawrence Trask secured the debt with land and the personhood of 198 enslaved people, the Trask 250. James had secured an additional loan amounting to more than $280,000 in current value from his sister-in-law and Eliza's mother, Elizabeth, on the exact same day. He used the same land and personhood of those 198 people as collateral. Eliza and her mother, Elizabeth, were set to earn 7% interest on their investment, but if James defaulted, they would stand to claim dominion over more than 4,000 acres and those same 198 enslaved people, my ancestors. The reality of the situation is jarring now. I mean, why would New Englanders finance slavery? The thought completely goes against what popular culture says about the North's role in slavery. Northern states were the first to abolish slavery and like to hang their hat on that even to this day, but most times the emancipation of their formerly enslaved was not immediate, and the necessary change in culture following abolition was definitely not instant. The Trask's furrow into the system of slavery started with Eliza's father, Israel. Historical accounts say that he was advised by Alexander Hamilton to head down to the Mississippi and Louisiana Territory to practice law. Israel followed that advice and was allegedly the first American to practice the vocation in New Orleans. By 1811, he had amassed land holdings of over 1,000 acres dispersed between St. James Parish in Louisiana and Adams and Wilkinson counties in Mississippi. His holdings also included more than 25 enslaved people, my ancestors. Later, his brothers James, William, and Augustus ventured down to fortify the family's plantation empire, expanding it to Concordia and Feliciana parishes in Louisiana. He and his family would spend a portion of their year in Massachusetts and the other down in Mississippi. By 1822, Israel was out of the slavery business, but only after amassing more than 4,000 acres of land wealth and 150 enslaved people with an immeasurable amount of soul value to work those acres. His removal from the business was really only direct. 6 years previous, he took over the Brimfield Cotton and Woolen Manufacturing Company. Not a soul has to wonder where the major source of his business came from. Israel's wife, Elizabeth Carter Trask, received household furniture, plates, horses, and carriage provisions, firewood, hay, and grain, and the equivalent of more than $700,000 today upon his death in Massachusetts in 1835. She also received all real estate in Springfield, which included the house they lived in, valued at nearly $250,000 today, and currently ran as the Elias Carter House, available to crash in for up to $225 a night. Their children, Israel C., William E., Edward, Eliza, Sarah, and their heirs received the residue and remainder of Israel's estate, both real and personal, held in trust until each child reached the age of 25, with interest paid to them annually. The most valuable, yet insidious notation on Israel's estate inventory was not the property listed, or the shares in the Ohio Life and Trust Company, or even the pews endowed at the First Parish of Springfield, a known abolitionist ministry. But what was hiding behind words written on two lines on a secondary page? Bear I see $140,000 in debt due to Israel by his brother James. But a true vetting and grit and grind genealogy research behind that debt, which is equivalent to more than $3.2 million today, shows that the money was used to maintain their family plantation empire. Israel had been directly out of the business for 13 years, but like the Mafia or even the Rolling 60s Crips, he was never truly out of it. It was for life. The debt was property of Israel's children, including Eliza, and proved to be the most lucrative part of the inheritance they received. In later years, their legacy accounts had ballooned to the equivalent of $640,000 each today. It wasn't always good, though. Within a year of her marriage, John Gallison Tappan's firm, Townsend and Tappan, had gone belly up, and creditors were seeking their coins through the Suffolk County, Massachusetts courts. A Harvard dropout, life member, and benefactor of the New England Historic and Genealogical Society, John's business choices were risky. From rubber to cotton, he was your guy for whatever turned a profit, even from the cotton produced by the very people his uncles, Lewis and Arthur, were trying to free. His picture is likely permanently stationed next to the definition of fail up. Regina Shober Gray, a resident of Boston, recalled some of the misfortune that befell John and thus Eliza and their family in 1878.
A terrible dispatch announces the defalcations of John G. Tappan of Boston as treasurer of some belting mills. He has used $500,000 of the corporation's money and gives up all he has in the world to meet the liabilities, of course. But what is to become of his poor wife and daughters, all accustomed to luxury and ample means? Proud girls, too, to have such a blow on their heads as the loss, not of money, that is a small thing in comparison, but of character and repute and honorable position for their father.
Eliza died on November 1st, 1894, of old age and intestinal issues. She was 81 years old, had given birth to 6 children, and was a subject of lawsuits in conjunction with her husband due to debts he amassed as part of his Boston Belting Company business. Financial woes aside, it seems as if the consequences of the duality that Eliza and John lived continued to catch up with them once the free labor of the enslaved no longer abounded. Sure, the larger legacy of the Tappan family will always be remembered for the good works they did on behalf of those who had no voice, such as establishing Oberlin College in Ohio for both genders and races, and benevolence towards the cause and plight of enslaved people. But the weight of being connected to the Trasks tips the scales toward a forced acceptance of nuance in the overall story. Unfortunately, nuance isn't one of America's strong suits.
It is not a Southern problem. It's a national problem.
The Trask 250 Plus is a multimedia series documenting the lives of more than 250 formerly enslaved of the Trask and Ventures families of Louisiana and Mississippi. Creative Commons license to Jay Blank for the track Foreign Car Instrumental and Ben On.